Hey, it's Sean Spicer.
And I'm Katie Pavlich.
The midterm elections are approaching and the anticipation is building with each passing day. President Trump's in full stump mode, traveling the country and campaigning for his fellow Republicans in Congress. It goes without saying, there's a lot on the line when Americans go to the polls on November 6th.
Stay up to date with the latest news and information by subscribing to our new podcast, Everything's Going to Be All Right. It's available now on radio.com, iTunes, or wherever you go to download your podcast.
That's Everything's Going to Be All Right.
Subscribe today and don't miss out.
Ooh, I like our conversations with candidates, Sounder. We get to debut that this week with candidate from the DFL candidate in the 3rd District. He is here competing against Eric Paulson, who will be here next Sunday, and that is Dean Phillips. Dean, you've been on the show many times before, and here you are 9 days before the election day.
9 days.
9 days.
Thanks for the reminder.
Well, thank you for coming in studio, because I know you have millions of places to be.
No, it's great to be here, Roshini.
But it is really important that you talk directly with voters.
You're here. That's what we're supposed to be doing.
I want to first start by asking you your thoughts. It's been a rough week of news of what I just wanted to call the politics of hate. And we were taking calls all during the first hour and some other texts coming in. And your reaction to, you know, just such a blatant act of hatred. Yes, it was one person allegedly who did this, but it's in this climate that we're all living in right now.
It is. And I, you know, I've come to recognize that our president is not one that's going to bring us together. I don't believe this feckless Congress is going to bring us together. And it's a great reminder that it's up to us, Roshini, everybody listening, to start reaching out our hands and encouraging conversation and recognizing that Congress can't legislate love and compassion and decency and acceptance. We've got to do it. And it's part of my mission in running for Congress is to remind people that we've got a much more significant obligation to ourselves and to our country and to our neighbors than we do to our political parties. And until we collectively recognize that and do something about it, it's only going to get worse.
Dean, you wrote a piece, an op-ed piece in the Star Tribune. I have it in my hand right here just from a few days ago. And you are very critical of Congress. I mean, you're obviously running against someone who has been in the 3rd District as the congressman for a while from that district. So, I mean, is this just because you're the opponent, now's the time to really criticize Congress? What do you mean by these jabs at the current Congress?
Well, what I'm like tens of millions of Americans who are so disappointed in the lack of any action on issues important to all of us. I'm clear in my disappointment about both sides, leadership in both parties. I believe it's time for a new generation of thoughtful, principled leaders that are there to make friendships and create relationships and get work done together. I'm running for Congress because of that. I never imagined 2 years ago to this day that I'd be running for Congress right now. And after the outcome of that last election in 2016, the tenor and tone of the entire race itself, not to mention the outcome, I thought to myself, I never want to wake up again feeling the same way I felt the morning after that last election. And I made a promise to my daughters at the breakfast table the next morning that I would do something. And I got to tell you, it's been the most wonderful, joyful journey of my life. It started out of anxiety, but it has been transformed into hopefulness. Even with the tragedy in Pittsburgh yesterday, one of the most horrific days I've had since I announced my candidacy well over a year and a half ago. Yet I remain hopeful, and I think we are better than that. But we have got to do something together. We cannot rely on legislatures and our Congress to do it for us.
You talk about this promise you made to your daughters. I mean, you were living, you know, you're a business owner. You come from a successful family. You've written about it. You've talked about it on our air before. You could have just continued on down that route. I mean, my guess is that would have been much more comfortable than doing what you've been doing for 2 years and, you know, also having ads about you out there in the stratosphere. So what was it even beyond just that promise you made to your daughters?
I knew this would be challenging. I didn't recognize how challenging it would be, but that's exactly why I'm doing it. I never wanted to look back and think that I could have at least played even a small role in getting us back on track, in inspiring people to come back together, and that's the mission of this. I'm not doing this as a Democrat. I'm doing this as an American and as a human being and for all of us, and you know, our campaign slogan is kind of a simple one. It's everyone's invited, and that shouldn't be unusual. It shouldn't be the exception. It should be the norm. And I do believe we can recapture a time when we worked together, we celebrated differences, we got along, and we became friendly again. We all have a role to play, and it's time to get to it. And that's why I ran, and that's why this has been the most extraordinary journey, no matter what the outcome next week from Tuesday. This has been a remarkable journey and a reminder of how remarkable our people are in this country, particularly here in Minnesota. We are unique, and we should be replicating the unique culture we have here in Minnesota around this country, because this country needs it.
It is exciting to hear record turnout of early voting absentee ballots. That's very exciting for me as someone who gets on the vote soapbox regularly.
Yeah, you know, in the last election, almost half of the country chose not to vote.
To me is a crime, Dean.
Well, in some countries it is.
In Peru, you have to vote. And 2 days prior to Election Day, you can't buy alcohol and drink. If you show up at the polls drunk, you're put in jail.
Well, I don't propose that.
It's a little extreme.
What I do propose, though, Roisin, is establishing our Election Day as a national holiday. I think we should elevate the importance, remind people of the responsibility. And I speak with too many people who find voting challenging, either having to leave their jobs or families, not thinking they're going to have the time. There might be too big of a line. You know, we can do better. But it, again, this goes back to something that Congress can't do and, frankly, shouldn't do. This is our choice. Thank goodness we live in a country where we can. And I think it's becoming quite clear, if we do not tend to that garden of democracy and get out and vote, no matter who you vote for, if we don't do that, it's going to get worse and worse. And that's why I'm hopeful. I think we're going to see turnout in this midterm that will eclipse those of recent decades.
I hope so. That is for sure. I'm talking with Dean Phillips. You can too. He's the DFL candidate in Minnesota's 3rd District, a race that has definitely gotten national attention, national dollars. Millions are pouring in. What do you want to say to Dean Phillips? Give us a call, 651 or 866-989-9226. Your calls are absolutely welcome. And I see we've got some texts and calls coming in. All right. This person asked this on the text line, Dean. Asked Dean what he would do about the wave of over 4,000 people coming from Central America currently headed to the U.S. southern border, committed to entering the U.S. illegally.
Well, we should do what we should always be doing, which is to ensure that our borders are secure. We have yet another example. It's a reminder of the need for comprehensive immigration reform policy in this country. Again, Congress has done nothing for a long time, which is terribly disappointing. But we need safe and secure borders in this country, period. We should be better employing technologies, human resources, and yet we need to be a humane nation. This is a country established as one of a place of refuge, as one that welcomed immigrants and those who shared our collective American dream. And I think we have to be cognizant of that. But we can be humane and also have secure borders. And Democrats and Republicans should agree on that. This is not a political issue. This is a human issue. And I want to elevate that conversation and remind all of us that we can do better.
All right. Dan is calling from Minnetonka. Hi there, Dan.
Hi there. Thank you.
Hi, Dan.
Dean, there's two things I'd like for you to reconsider. I do think that any copying of any socialist country in the way of government takeover healthcare is extremely dangerous to the population. They limit the government's limit care and limit access because of the costs. It has to be consumer-driven, Mr. Phillips. If it's not consumer-driven, without competition, the costs are going to be exorbitant and people will die. You know, I understand in Canada the waiting lists are quite enormous, 7 months to a year, depending on where you live, or even longer to get an MRI or a CAT scan, according to Lee Carusco, the doctor who now practices in Minnesota. The other issue would be we cannot allow people that come here illegally or are here illegally to remain here without any consequences. There is a process to become a legal immigrant. And to suggest that we should be a sanctuary state is dangerous, especially for our citizens here who grew up here, our citizens that pay taxes. It just invites people by the millions like we see now to flood the border.
All right, Dean, what do you have to say to Dan's comments?
Dan, thank you. I've never, ever suggested a government takeover of healthcare. In fact, I'm quite opposed to that notion. I think the only areas in which government should be the provider of healthcare is through the Veterans Administration, as we currently do. And as you know, we have public hospitals around the country. I've never proposed that. In fact, I like competition amongst health systems, and we need that to be.
So you do not want a single payer plan.
No, what I do believe is that we should be a nation that makes the moral decision to ensure that everybody has access to affordable care when they need it. We're the only developed country in the entire world that chooses not to. We pay twice as much as any developed nation. Our outcomes are mid-pack. And we already have a nation in which 18% of our economy is consumed by healthcare. So I would make the argument that we have the resources in the system. We have to better allocate them. The only proposition relative to a government program that I'm in favor of is expanding Medicare as a public buy-in option so that Americans can actually make choices. Have the freedom to choose a plan that's best for you. Create even more competition amongst insurers. I agree with Dan. We need more competition. That's the way to do so. I do not favor a comprehensive takeover of healthcare by the government, especially the provision of healthcare. As for the second question, we might have 10 to 12 million undocumented people in this country who wish to become Americans, people who are working hard, who have children in our schools, who are obeying the law. I do think for those people, we should provide an earned path to citizenship. It is not just the humane thing to do. It is economically the only viable thing to do.
And do you see that happening in conjunction with enforcing the laws so that we don't have continued illegal aliens coming in, illegal immigrants?
Yeah, I do not favor open borders. I do not know any. I know some people talk about the Democratic Party favoring open borders. I think that's nonsensical. We do not. This is not a nation that should have open borders. We need to enforce laws. We need to have more thoughtful laws in place. We need to better take advantage of technology and human resources to ensure that our borders are secure. And we need a better mechanism by which people can become Americans who are already here. And that's why I use the word earned path to citizenship, because Dan is right. There are thousands of people around the world that wish to become Americans, that are paying money, that are waiting their time in line to do so, and we should be cognizant of that.
Absolutely. There is a process. All right, we've got a lot of calls coming in. Mike is calling from Brooklyn Park. Hi, Mike.
Hey, thanks for having me. Hey, Dean, I've got one question for you. I didn't really hear you say, should we let the caravan in? Yeah, I mean, I don't really understand what you're trying to say.
No, Mike, I don't think we should let the caravan in. I said earlier we need strong, secure borders, and we should deploy the resources to the border to ensure that a caravan of multi-thousands of people don't simply come in. We have a process by which refugees can seek refuge in the United States. We have a process. I believe that process can be more robust, and we need comprehensive immigration reform. I do not favor letting our borders be wide open to people to walk into. That is nonsensical.
Well, I mean, no, we can't just go to France. I studied in France many years ago during college. You could just show up. Like, you had to have a visa, a student visa. You have to have paperwork. And every country really does require that.
Yeah, and by the way, this also starts with our allies. We have a president and an administration right now who is converting our allies into enemies, our enemies into potential allies. And this is when we should be working with the Mexican government on a thoughtful solution in the interests of both of our nations. But I will repeat time and time again. No, we should not just let thousands of people into the country.
Not that simple. And the other piece is, you know, I don't know. It's going to take a while. They're not going to show up by election day. It's going to take a while. And maybe some of them have some game plan for some sort of legal process. We shall see. David is calling from Minnetonka. Hi, David.
Hi, how are you? Hi, Dean. When you are elected, how will you deal with that terrible problem we're having with gun violence?
Oh, thank you, David. Yesterday was just another a horrific reminder of how much work we have to do. I'm so appalled at Congress over the last couple of decades, having done almost nothing to better protect all of us, our neighborhoods, our schools, our houses of worship. The fact that an overwhelming majority of Americans, Democrats and Republicans, favor simple common sense solutions like universal background checks, the fact that we have not implemented that, in my estimation, is a dereliction of duty. So I favor about a 4-point plan. I think it's time for universal background checks. I also think that we should look at weapons and devices that cause mass human destruction in a matter of moments. We do not allow hand grenades, bazookas, automatic weapons, bombs in our streets. I don't think we should allow any weapon or device that can cause mass human carnage in the matter of moments. It is not in the best interest of this nation, and I feel very strongly about that. I also think it's time that we need mental health professionals in every single school in this country to take care of our children. We need anti-bullying programs in every single school in this country to take care of children. We also need to demand that the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, study this issue and make thoughtful recommendations to our Congress so that we can effect change that is nonpartisan and data-based. When we had highway fatalities skyrocketing in the 1960s and 70s, we did not ban cars. We made them safer. We added seatbelts, airbags. We redesigned highways. We improved lighting and crash barriers. And that is the analogy we need to start applying to gun violence in this country. It is not a Democratic issue. It's not a Republican issue. It is affecting all of us. And to think that 11 people were shot and killed simply for being Jewish in a house of prayer by a madman with a gun is appalling, and I've had enough of it.
Yeah, and I mean, I thought about that this morning. I went to 7:30 Mass with my mom, and I just kept thinking, like, what if someone just walked in here right now and started shooting? It is so beyond the realm of what I ever thought could be possible in a house of worship of any kind.
And now we have to think about it. Every time I'm in a school now and I speak with students and teachers and staff, they're afraid. I go into houses of worship. I just came from a church service in one of our wonderful African communities. I will soon be at Temple Israel mourning along with our community for those whose lives were lost in Pittsburgh yesterday. The fact that now we all have to think about this wherever we are, when we're worshiping, when we're eating, when we're being educated, is enough to should make us all sick. And the fact that this is a political issue is nonsensical. I will work with anybody who wants to effect some change that will keep us safer. And to think that that is not achievable is counterintuitive and absolutely counter the principles of being an American.
All right, Dean Phillips, he is the Democratic candidate in the 3rd District. We'll hear from Congressman Eric Paulson, the GOP candidate in that district, next Sunday in our Conversations with Candidates series. Dean Phillips, we really appreciate you stepping off the trail to join us in studio, and I'm sure people can reach out to you directly on your campaign site.
Thank you, Roshini.
All right. You have a good day. We will continue to take your calls and text 651-989-9226 or 866-989-9226 until the top of the hour. And then after the news, we'll talk with GOP candidate in the 1st, Jim Hagedorn.